to minute 121 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Lisa Leahy of the Critical Movie Critics and the upcoming Between the Scares podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rob. I'm pretty excited to be here.
Yeah. I think you're actually my first guest who's never seen this movie before watching it for this, so I'm really looking forward to hearing all of your ins this week. Getting a very fresh look at this movie.
Awesome. Hopefully I don't embarrass myself.
Hopefully you liked it, but we'll get to that. Don't give away spoilers on that.
Already.
No, that's okay. Not a problem. So minute 121, which, first of all, I'm very happy to say we've passed the 2-hour mark. You know, only another 52 minutes to go before we, you know, wrap up this movie. So hopefully everyone has still been able to keep up with us and they haven't, you know, gotten tired of listening to us talk about The Great Escape.
So we're in the good stuff now. You can't bail now.
What do you mean? Every minute in this movie is good. There's no
question. This is true. But now we're starting to get over the hill now, you know. That's worse. That doesn't work. This idea of, like, we've gotten into the next act.
Exactly.
You know, like, we've turned the page and something new is about to start. So you can't fail now.
Exactly. Minute 121 begins with Henley and Colin running for the forest and ends with Willie assuring Roger that Danny is all right. As we discussed last Friday, they started the escape. Prisoners are starting to get out one by one. And then we finally get to Henley and Blythe, who, just to remind everyone, Blythe is blind as a bat. So Henley has to help him along, and he does so in this minute. They start running towards the forest. It's funny the way that you see that Henley pushes his head down, you know, to try and avoid a tree branch and things like that. You know, they throw in all these little things just to make it seem as if Donald Pleasance, you know, Colin is actually blind.
Right.
By just, like, bopping his head down and things like that. So it's interesting that they do that, even though it's not really necessary, because they did just run across the field and they're not really crouching that much.
And that's true. A lot of the running, you know, you sort of look at it and go, okay, well, they don't seem too concerned about being seen, but I did like that. I think that is kind of necessary. It's believable that you've got Henley really looking out for Colin in every little element. You know, if you... to be able to lose your sight and so quickly, really seemingly out of nowhere, and then to have to do this crazy momentous thing, Colin has to completely rely on Henley. And it's nice to know that even a tiny little branch that could catch him in the ear, you know, Henley's looking out for him. That takes a lot.
Right. No, I agree. I just find it funny that when they're running across, like, they come out of the hole, they're standing up. You know, they only wait to duck down once they're actually in the forest.
Those branches can be fierce.
I wonder if they're actually real branches or this is, you know, they're on a soundstage.
Oh, they gotta be. Those trees looked terrible, I gotta tell you. One of my complaints is that these trees looked cheesy.
So in other words, they're plastic.
They were definitely, you know, plastic.
So the idea is that he wants to save Colin from getting hit in the head with plastic leaves, which probably could hurt more than regular
leaves.
Yeah,
you know, that they might cut into him. We've got to be careful.
Yeah. Then he might look like Blofeld or something afterwards. You never know. And so we see them run into the forest. And then, interestingly, this is one of the few times in the movie where we get a completely black screen for a second. I mean, the obvious reason that we're getting a black screen is because of the fact that we're in the middle of a blackout.
Yep.
You know, we get to hear Danny and Willie have their little discussion in the dark. You know, basically, Danny is completely frightened. Obviously, you know, they wanted to add a little tension here and have them be the characters stuck in the tunnel when the lights go out, after everything that we saw over the last few weeks with Danny showing how much fear he had of being in cramped spaces. So now we get to see the payoff of that. You know, we see Charles Bronson acting really, really scared, which is not something that you usually see.
Exactly.
Or that you would expect.
Exactly. Especially, you know, the Danny he's been to this point. I mean, only very recently has he started showing this fear, this phobia he's having of tight spaces and dark spaces, where in the beginning of the film, when we first meet Danny, you know, he's this strong guy. He's joshing with other men and, you know, getting the things done that he needs to get done. And it's only recently that he's really started turning, and now you really start feeling for him.
Yeah.
you start associating, like, well, if I was in this dark tunnel, how would I feel? And I would probably feel pretty much the same way as Danny does.
No, but he also has a claustrophobic history. Do you have a claustrophobic history?
I don't. Okay. I don't. And I'm thankful for that, but then I still would also be worried. So perhaps he's that much more worried because me not having the same kind of history.
Exactly. I mean, what's funny is that when we think of Charles Bronson, so most people think of him in all of his roles in the late 60s, early 70s, mid-70s. You know, this is a relatively early starring role for him. I mean, he was in a few movies beforehand. You know, he had some big roles in them also. This isn't the first big film of his, but he still doesn't have the persona that we all think of when we think of Charles Bronson. You know, from Death Wish, and you know, especially you know, a lot of people have said that they find it strange looking at him without a mustache.
Yeah.
You know, they're used to having the I actually think he looks better and more reliable, you know, without the mustache here, with what he has to do here.
You want to trust.
Exactly.
I agree.
Exactly. And not to say that I wouldn't trust him in Death Wish or in Assassination or any of the other movies that he made afterwards, but, you know, I've always been a fan of his movies from the 60s. You know, you have this, you have Once Upon a Time in the West, which I love him in, mm-hmm. Dirty Dozen. You know, those are the type of movies that I've liked him in, and he never has a mustache in those movies. So for me, you know, unlike most people, I prefer him in his pre-mustache roles than his post-mustache roles.
The clean-shaven Charles Bronson.
Exactly. So they start having this little conversation about Danny saying that, you know, that everything's going to collapse on him, and Willie tries to assure him. And I love how Willie reassures him. He has to say his name three times. He goes, Danny, Danny, Danny. It's all right.
Yeah.
Danny, it's the lights. You don't have to worry so much.
I love how we start pairing people up now. Like, I loved this element of the film where we start buddying up. You know, like, we're going to leave the schoolroom now. Everyone get a buddy.
Exactly.
It seemed really great that these two come together, and I love that. You know, Henley was partnered up with Blythe, and then now you've got Willie and Danny, you know, just looking out for each other.
Yeah, but Willie and Danny have been looking out for each other from the start. You know, even in when they get into the camp, you see how they work together so easily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a scene at the beginning, which you probably have a slight memory of, where, you know, they're getting ready to break out right at the very beginning, and Danny then asks Willie for some cigarettes, and he just gives them to him. You know, cigarettes are a very high commodity that people need to use in prisons and in POW camps and everything like that. And the fact that they showed right away that the two of them are basically sharing everything. And we see that they're inseparable throughout the whole movie. You know, it's not really much of a surprise that they stuck together. And anyone who's seen the whole movie knows that it's beneficial for them to have stuck together at some point.
Mm.
But we won't go there yet. We'll wait a few weeks to get there.
Not yet. Hold on to that.
Exactly. We still have another 2 months of this podcast, so we'll keep people in suspense who have decided not to watch the movie and just want to listen to us talk about it, you know, before then. And then,
of course.
And then we jump back to another black screen. You know, the black screen moves, and then we hear Roger and Mac at the final way station, I guess you can call it, right before they're about to get out. Roger starts screaming down into the tunnel, which... it's pretty funny because they're trying to, you know, keep silence here.
You would think.
But you would think, exactly. You know, are they that far down that if they're screaming and the hole is open on top that no one's going to hear? I mean, are the air raid sirens aren't going off anymore, are they? I don't think so.
No.
I don't recall hearing the air raid sirens at that point. So,
no, they've stopped.
Exactly. So for him to be screaming down, you know, he's like, it's a screaming whisper.
Yeah.
You know, or it's a loud whisper, I guess you can call it. And he goes, light the fat lamps down there, which is great because, you know, you get to see the whole time that the lamps that they light, they're not your normal, they don't have candles. Basically, I mean, in the original book, which, did you read the book?
I haven't read the book.
No.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this. I'm sorry.
Oh, I think I might have to fail you.
You may.
Just everyone knows, Lisa's a teacher, so, you know.
I do love my fiction, though. I'm a fiction girl, so it's tough sometimes to get into the nonfiction, especially the history. But, you know, I'll try to be prepared for next time, I promise.
apparently, that's what all your students probably say to you. And And do you believe them when they say that to you?
No, because they don't say that to me. They tell me they read it. And, you know, at least I'm being honest, and I didn't, you know, try and use the Spark Notes as my version of, oh, yeah, I definitely read it. No, you didn't.
Right. So in the original book that this is based on, they explain the fact that they made the candles out of margarine and wicks. Oh. So, you know, for him to say, light the fat lamps, that makes sense because, you know, they're basically burning the fat. Mm-hmm. And using wicks on that. So I like the fact that they stay as true as possible in that aspect. I mean, there's a lot of things that are very different from The Real Escape. During this week, we'll be discussing numerous aspects of that. This is one of the ones that they got right and they did well. I mean, I also love the fact that everyone's got a pack of matches on them. You know,
they were prepared. Doesn't matter where you are. Those scroungers did their job.
That's right. Everyone needs to be prepared with the matches. It makes you wonder where they got so many matches. True. But Henley is good at his job, I guess.
Well, I mean, they're not running around with, you know, like a little plastic Bic lighter, I don't think. So they got to light those cigarettes somehow.
Exactly. That is very true. You know, after Roger does that, they go back to the darkness with Danny and Willie. And you can hear them say there's been an air raid and they've cut off the lights. Mm-hmm. And then once again, we get Willie trying to reassure Danny by saying, says to him, it's all right, listen to me. And then he lights up the little fat lamp there. And we get to see, once again, Charles Bronson looking scared. He's completely scared. Not something that you see very often in movies with Charles Bronson. So he actually gets to show everyone that he can play so scared.
Yeah.
And we get to see also the cramped space that he really is in here. You know, you see the trolley. You see that they have a lamp on the trolley. So I guess Willie must have found the lamp on the side and, you know, put it on the trolley in order to light it up. And then he like tries to focus Danny and says, Danny, look, there's a lamp. And then it's great that Danny grabs the lamp and starts looking at it. And you see that he's starting to understand, okay, this is what we're going to have to do. And this is we're going to have to, you know, this is how I'm going to get out of this. And then once again, we get Roger and Mac screaming back down the tunnel, whispering loudly, come on, fellas, move. Mm-hmm. We can get dozens out in this darkness, which is also helpful to the viewer because they're trying to tell us, you know, the fact that, okay, there still is this air raid going on, so it's completely dark and they can try and get more out. But, oh, dozens. I think he might be exaggerating a little bit because they're not moving that fast.
I mean, it depends on how the air raid goes, I guess, but.
Yeah. I mean, they're not moving as fast as we would like them to move. There's no question about that. And then Danny begins to realize what's going on. He puts the lamp back up. And then we get a quick shot of Hiltz trying to figure out what's going on. Once again, we get Roger screaming down, what the hell's going on? And then Danny, we see that his face shows that, okay, he's figured it out. He's going to be able to get out. And then he convinces Willie that he's got to go first. Then he'll be right out after him. And he tells Danny says, you go. And he goes, no, Danny. And he says, go. And then he pushes him onto the trolley. Willie realizes that this is the best way to do it. So he climbs on the trolley. As soon as he climbs on the trolley, he doesn't have to motion or anything like that. Roger at this point knows. Usually you have the double tap, you know, the little tap with the...
The little trowel.
That's right.
That's the word I wanted.
There you go. They tap it with the trowel. In this case, they don't need to. Immediately Roger knows and he starts pulling. Pulls the rope pretty frantically.
Yeah.
And we get to see, you know, him pulling that rope until Willie finally appears. And then Roger begins to interrogate Willie. What is it? What's this, Willie? And he says, the problem is Danny. And then Roger goes, is he stuck in there? The question is when he says, is he stuck in there, do you think he's concerned for Danny? Or is he concerned for the mission that basically Danny's messing things up for everyone else?
Oh, what I definitely think he's worried about me messing things up for someone else. Roger is focused on getting this job done. He has all of these moving parts. He's got these guys who are really professional at what they do. They know what they're doing. They've got their job. This is the guy who, you know, knows how to go through these tunnels. So he's like, why is he holding everybody up? He needs to get moving here. And now they have this extra time that's been bought for them through this air raid. You know, now Roger has in his mind that he can get out dozens of guys. So mm-hmm. He doesn't need to be slowed down. He needs this to move faster. Right. And so if someone is blocking that tunnel, he's not going to be too happy about it.
That is very, very true. So Willie's response is that he's all right.
Yeah. You know,
that's pretty much how this minute ends. So do you have any other notes for this minute, Lisa?
Well, what I liked about this minute was the symmetry of this. So coming into the movie for the first time, not having seen it, and preparing to speak with you about it, I watched the minutes first and took down some preliminary notes, not knowing who these people were, really what was going on. And what I liked about this minute was the symmetry, the way that they were set up. I really liked how you had, on the left side of the screen, you have Willie and Danny talking to each other in the dark, trying to get their bearings. And then when we would switch over to Mac and Roger, they're on the right side of the screen. So there was this interesting balance being set up, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I really liked that element of, you know, these two guys, Roger and Mac on the right, are trying to get things going. Let's keep going. Let's keep going. But Willie and Danny need a minute, and they're taking their minute, or seconds, as the case may be. But you have this situation where they're set up visually that way. They're in opposition, and we need to get them both on, or get them all, literally and figuratively, on the same side of mm-hmm. this plan. Like, let's get Danny going because we need to move. And so I liked the visual of that, especially not knowing really who was whom in this moment. When I did come back and having seen the movie all the way through, seeing how all of this was working, it was nice the way they set those visuals up.
Wow, that's great insight. I mean, that's something I never would have paid any attention to for the very fact that I can't even remember the first time I saw this. It must have been when I was a kid. So, yeah. You know, I've always known who they are and what's going on. So, wow, that's just great. All right, so if you have other notes for this minute, do you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Well, you can get in touch with me. Online, we have, through the Rabbit Hole podcast system, you can check that out to find the Between the Scares podcast episodes. And you can also find me occasionally on the Lambcast podcast episodes. I pop up there every now and then. And I don't know. We'll see what comes together in the new year.
All right. Yeah. You got, we're right now ending 2021, so you never know, 2022, just around the corner. All right. Well, while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher that you might be using to listen to this show. You can contact us by email at thegreatminute@gmail.com. Our Facebook group is The Cooler. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. And our Twitter account is Great Escape MXM. Lisa, you want to come back again and discuss another minute with us tomorrow?
I would love that. Thank you.
Okay. So until tomorrow, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.